Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Are you scared?
Should you be?
AI is on the rise. Chatbots are taking over. They've copied our human works and are out there thinking about what they can do to replace us. Except they're not. They can't. AI chatbots aren't aware of what they're saying, so they're not thinking, and they aren't looking at copies of anything. Let's help you know a little more about ChatGPT. ChatGPT and other tools powered by large language models are impressive. You type something into them, they answer. Not only that, they answer reasonably well. You can ask them questions, and most of the time they give you correct answers. Yeah, I know that the times they don't answer correctly gets all the attention, but they do answer correctly more often than not. You can ask them to imagine things, and they look like they imagine them. Ask ChatGPT to tell you a story if you haven't yet. It's going to tell you a great one. It might be along the lines of a five-year-old, but it's still going to be fun. So how does it do this? I'm not going to dig into all the details or get into the engineering or the mathematics, but I am going to tell you what I think are the most important things to know to understand what ChatGPT does and how large language models work in general. Number one, they don't know what they're saying. They're just very good engines at predicting what would likely come next based on their training. Number two, they don't have a database of answers. This is one of the common misconceptions I hear. They are synthesizing every answer from scratch. And number three, nobody actually knows exactly how they come up with their answers, making it challenging to try to change how those answers are generated. We're going to focus on the first one of those because that one I think is the most important. ChatGPT is trying to generate the most likely next word based on the words it has been given. I'm going to borrow an excellent example from the exceptional scientist Stephen Wolfram. Let's say we have the text, "The most important thing for a student is to be able to." All right, that's our prompt. The most important thing for a student is to be able to. And I'm going to ask you to tell me the most likely next words in that sentence based on all of the works of human literature. So you're going to have to go out. You're going to have to read every book ever written. You're going to have to read all the web pages published. And then you're going to, you can just read a large percentage of them and then you'll be pretty sure. So you can make a model based on a large percentage. But then after that long, arduous journey and all of your extensive, accurate notes, you come up with a table. The next word in the sentence, "The most important thing for a student is to be able to," 5.1% of the time would be "learn." 4.7% of the time, it'd be "understand." 3.8% of the time, you find it would be the word "do." 2.9% of the time, it's the word "work." And then after that is "make," and so on and so on and so on in your table. The most important thing for a student is to be able to learn, understand, do, make, etc. Those are the most likely words to follow in that sentence. So then we know the most likely next word would be "learn." So the most important thing for a student is to be able to learn. Great. Now on to the next word in that sentence, or possibly a new sentence. I don't know. You're going to have to consult your notes. Now, it should be quicker this time because you won't have to read a large percentage of all of humans' literature, but you will have to consult those extensive notes you wrote on them. That's essentially what ChatGPT is doing, except much faster than you or I could do it. Astute people will be wondering why ChatGPT gives a different answer to the same prompt if it's just picking the most likely word each time. That is an excellent observation. That's because the first filter that humans applied to change how LLMs work, or at least one of the most important ones, is something called temperature. Don't get too hung up on that word. Just follow me here. For some reason, if you have the model output the most likely word every time, you get a flat and uninteresting response, which may not even be that helpful. It certainly won't be impressive. I'm going to borrow from Stephen Wolfram's explanation here. He had an example prompt, "The best thing about AI is its ability to," and when you have it pick the most likely next word, you get, "The best thing about AI is its ability to learn from experience. It's not just a matter of learning from experience, it's learning from the world around you. The AI is a very good example of this. It's a very good example of how to use AI to improve your life." That's what GPT-2, I think in his case, thought was the next most likely word in the sentence, and that's what its output was. Do you see what I mean? It's not a bad paragraph, but it's a little redundant. It keeps repeating things. It's very obvious, and it's flat. It's not very creative. So instead, models set a temperature, which have it pick a word at random that's near the top of your list of most likely next words, but not always the top one, and not always the second one. It bounces around. This does two things. One, for some reason, that makes the text sound more alive. And two, because it's picking at random, not always the second, could be the fifth, could be the eighth, could be the third, the same prompt can generate a different answer each time. How far down the list it goes in the words is called the temperature. I'm going to go 10 words down. I'm going to go 30 words down. That's your temperature setting. Oversimplifying, but that's kind of how it works. So instead, if you set your temperature at, I think Wolfram set it at 0.8, he got, "The best thing about AI is its ability to really come into your world and just blow your mind about what kinds of things are possible." Go read Stephen Wolfram's explanation at stephenwolfram.com for actual examples drawn from various models that show you the effects of temperature changes, but you get the drift. You get a more natural, vibrant sound when you set that temperature. Actual scientists are starting to get quite cross with me at this point, I expect, because in fact, these models don't predict words. They predict tokens. They don't predict them one word or even one token at a time, or it would just be gibberish. They have to estimate what a proper sequence would look like. And to estimate the sequence, they need a model of what language looks like. In fact, they need quite a large model, hence the name large language model. And that model can be used to see what patterns actually correspond to recognizable speech and which ones don't. So in practice, these models are making an estimate of how semantics work, categorizing words as different parts of speech, nouns, verbs, adjectives, etc., and then creating a meaning space that indicates how close to each other those various pieces of text are. Now, that's where we would start to get into neural nets and the actual mechanics of artificial intelligence and how these kinds of tools work, which I said I wasn't going to do here. But that should be enough for you to understand the chatbot doesn't know what it's saying. It's doing a very sophisticated prediction that on the outside looks similar to thinking. Okay, on to number two. ChatGPT doesn't look up its answers. I think a lot of people have a mental image of ChatGPT being asked a question and then doing a high-speed computer search through a spreadsheet with all the answers and then coming back to you with what it found in a clever, original phrasing or something. That's not it. That's not how this works. As we just learned, the model comes up with things based on what words or text it thinks should be most likely to happen next. And the model is trained on billions of words of text. those words get put into complex arrays of weights based on how frequently they appear and where they show up. And again, I'm saying words, but it's actually tokens that can be assembled into words. But thinking of it as words is going to help you understand a little better. Okay, so let's use my own book as an example. I wrote a book called Pilot X. It's a novel, and it is, in fact, in the GPT-4 training data somewhere. But it's not there in a form humans would recognize. Okay, you can't just look through the training data and go, oh, there it is. There's my book. It, in fact, has been broken down and added to the weights of all similar words in the text. So what the training data did was take each word in my novel and go, oh, this word is near there. Okay, so add a little bit of a weighting factor to this word shows up sometimes next to these two words. Not much of a weighting factor, to be honest, because it's also adding weighting factors from billions and billions of other works, but it's informed the model in that way. So in a sense, my book is there, but it's not a copy of the book. The model has used the book to inform its array of weighting. This concept is important when understanding copyright lawsuits. It doesn't mean a judge might not reasonably find infringement. Okay, I'm not saying, oh, there's no copy there, therefore everything's fine. The infringement would have to be from the use of the work, not the storing of it as a copy. So if I have to make a copy of Pilot X in order to train, maybe that making of the copy was the infringement. But the storing of the weights based on that, I don't think is considered copying, because the copy doesn't exist. It also makes arguments that show a chatbot outputting copies of text less compelling. You may say, well, wait a minute, I saw this thing put out an entire New York Times article when you asked it. Now that you kind of understand how it works, I think you'll understand that those are flukes. Based on the array of weighted text, you really need to create a special prompt to get the model to extract that exact text out of all those array of data. Or maybe you just get lucky. But the model doesn't know anything. It just knows what words tend to go next to other words. Finally, my third point, nobody really knows how these models actually make their connections. There are many stories of scientists being surprised with how models respond to prompts and texts. In fact, one of the most famous surprises is that you can tell it, hey, that's wrong, and it will go, oh, okay, let me redo that. That's something that anybody who's used ChatGPT has run into, but that was a surprise the first time it did that. This is the thing I suspect causes some scientists to start worrying about emergent behaviors and, you know, honestly raising the alarm about whether AI will become self-aware. So let me explain that. Again, oversimplifying and without getting to the true way neural networks work, imagine an algorithm with 175 billion parameters. Okay, those parameters are each a weighted value for a token that can be used to make up a word. Now imagine that this neural network has all these digital neurons that have trained themselves by strengthening or weakening connections between each other as they try out various outputs to see what works. Now we put in a text prompt. The model breaks that down into values and sends it through the neural net. The net follows the path of strengthened connections guided by weights and values. It is almost impossible for a human mind to follow that path given the sheer size and complexity of it. But even if we could, there would not be a theoretical framework for why it selected that output, why that neural network was created that way, why those particular connections led to this particular output. It would seem to us like a fluke based on the input. There's no theoretical reason why this should work. It just does. Now, if you're having a hard time with that, if it's making you uncomfortable, you're not alone. But let me give you a couple of other things that are similar. Gravity. Physicists still don't know exactly why gravity works. Einstein did an excellent job explaining large parts of how it works, but we still don't know exactly why. Is it gravitons? It might be. Nobody's actually sure. It's one of the ultimate goals of physics to unify gravity with quantum mechanics and put all of particle physics in one happy model. But not knowing how gravity fundamentally happens does not stop us from understanding almost everything about it, and therefore being able to do great things like launch rockets that can get to Mars. Another example is electricity. We know what it is. We know that it is electrons causing it, but we still don't know exactly what's going on the most basic level. It's a soup of electrons down there in the wire, and once we get too close to it, we actually don't know why the electrons seem to all be traveling in one direction, because they're not. But it doesn't matter, because we know enough about electricity to predict with accuracy how it will behave and harness it to do very many things. Large language models are similar. We know how they're constructed. We know what they do and how they behave. We do not know at the basic level what's going on internally that makes them work. Some scientists are fine with that. Others worry that we haven't spent enough time with them to rule out possibly dangerous behaviors. But the more time goes on, the more we learn. And that brings me to my last point, which is built on those first three principles that I discussed here. The model is predicting, not thinking. The model isn't looking things up or copying. And we don't know exactly how it works under the hood. Because of all that, we have to interfere a lot to make it work the way we want to. The outputs you're getting from these chatbots these days are heavily modified, even beyond temperature, which is why you see so many stories of AIs outputting offensive or wrong or undesirable things. Humans have to correct for the model to make it do what they want. Think back to the idea of temperature. That's one of the earliest interventions we did to make the model work the way we want it to. There's lots of other adjustments and tweaks, some of them very complex, some simple filters that modify the output. So anytime you have a chatbot say, as a large language model, I'm not programmed to, that's a human filter that caused it to say that, not the model itself, at least most of the time. Which is why I personally am less concerned about emergent generalized intelligence. It seems like we can't get the model to act human without interfering anyway. So it's less likely, not impossible, but less likely that it will start mimicking humans on its own. What gets lost in the controversy sometimes, I think, is just how impressive these general chatbots can be. The fact they can take almost any prompt and come up with something intelligible and mostly useful is frankly astounding. And I think that dazzling display has left us imagining they will just get better at generalized things. Maybe they will, maybe they won't. What is true is that these kinds of models seem to work best when they're trained and focused on smaller subsets of problems rather than trying to be everything. So training an LLM to power a chatbot for a specific hospital seems to work better and with fewer errors than using a chatbot trained for everything to help out at that same hospital. But that's straying into the speculative, so we'll leave that for now. I hope this helps you have a more reasonable opinion of AI's strengths and weaknesses. In other words, I hope you know a little more about ChatGPT. Know a Little More is researched, written, and hosted by me, Tom Merritt. Editing and production provided by Anthony Lamos in conjunction with Will Saddleberg and Dog and Pony Show Audio. It's issued under a Creative Commons Share Attribution 4.0 international license.
Dog and Pony Show Audio.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.